This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Our secondary, they're all there to help the human being achieve his purpose. They are only there for his purpose, to assist him achieve his purpose, his function. According to all the different bechinos, all the different aspects that need to exist there, as I shall still explain inside, says the Derech Hashem. All the midos, all the good characteristics, are aspects of shleimus, which are there to perform man to perfect himself in. And matter, and bad characteristics, are elements of chisorin, of lack of perfection. Sha'odom musom beinehem, and the human being is placed between these, between intellect and fine character on the one hand, and matter and poor character on the other hand. Interesting how that gets classified: intellect and fine character, matter and poor character. And his function is liknos lo hashleimus, to acquire through his own efforts, to acquire shleimus, to acquire perfection. So that's the Derech Hashem's introduction into the Tachlis HaBriyo, into the purpose of the Briyo. And he now focuses more directly onto the Min HaEnoshi, onto the human species, which is Perigim, the Min HaEnoshi. Well, there are two parts of the Torah. There's the spiritual part of the Torah and the material part of the Torah. The material part of the Torah is secondary to man. Yeah. The spirit, the parchment and the ink is all, that's all secondary to the Torah. But the meaning of it is primary, is more than primary. That's before the human being even comes into existence. B'mino enoshi, Sif Aleph. Kva zochalnu, he yoso odom, yoso abriyo, anivres lidobek bo yizborach shemay. We've established already that man is that creation that was made to attach itself to the Ribbono shel Olam. V'hi hamuteles bein hashleimus v'achisroinus, and it's that part of the creation which is placed equidistant from perfection and imperfection. V'hayicholes b'yodo liknos hashleimus, and the ability has been given to man to achieve perfection. V'ulam, but there's a condition. Tzorech shiyezeh b'vchiroso rutzoino, it has to be free choice. Ki ilu ayo muchrot b'maisov liyez b'yecher al kol ponim b'shleimus. For if man were impelled or compelled to choose the correct way at all times, lo yo nikro be'emes bal shleimuso, then he would never become the master of his own perfection. And that element, that dimension of his shleimus would be missing. And we discussed last week that that's essential, that the human being must be his own balabos. He must be responsible for his own perfection, so that he can enjoy the rewards of his own perfection. And if man was forced into one or other of the directions, then the intention of Hashem would not have been achieved. Al kein huchrach, therefore it is necessary sheyunach hadover lebechirosoi, that the matter will be left to his own choice. Shetiheyen netiyosoi shekulo lishnei hatzudodim, that his tendency is equally balanced in each direction. Veloy muchrachas leechod mehem, and is not balanced in favor, is not weighted in favor of either one of them. Veyehye boikoyach habechiro libchor bedas or bechifetz, and he needs to have the power of choice to choose consciously and with desire whichever he wishes. And the ability within him to acquire whichever he wants, to acquire Shleimus or to acquire Chisorim. And that's why there has to be placed in the human being drives for good and drives for evil. There can't be a natural tendency for one more than the other. So there's a natural tendency of the Yetzer HaTov and there's a natural tendency of Yetzer Hara. And in addition to that, he is given the ability to choose and to decide. That's what the human being is, a combination of Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer Hara with the ability to make a choice one way or another. No other Bria has that constitution of elements. But in order to have this thing completely developed, Gozra Chochmo Elyono, Ribbono Shel Olam decreed, Sheyeh Ha'odom Murkav Mishnei Hefechin. The human being has to now be constituted of two opposite bodies. The Haina, that is, Minashomo Sichlis Vezako, an intellectual and pure Neshomo, Veguf Arzi Veochel, and an earthy and impure body. This word ochur is very difficult to translate correctly. I think the English translated as murky, is that right? About your captain, how does it
mean?
Unenlightened. No. That's a bit misleading. Sorry? Yeah, ochur, it's murky. No, it's lacking purity. It's ochur, it's murky. Shekol echod mehem yite beteva letzidoi, and each one naturally pulls man in its direction. Dahainu haguf lechumrius, the body and all that goes with it, pulls man to matter. Vaneshomo lesichlius, and the soul and all that goes with it pulls man to spirituality. So the man is being pulled constantly in two opposite directions, and that creates a tension. And that tension is life. You find between them a tension, a war. In such a way, if the neshomo manages to win, then the neshomo is elevated, and the body goes with it. Now this one can't understand, by the way, without the yisoid of Lot's Matzmut Shabbashir, the snake and the stick principle. Otherwise, how does the guf and the neshama affect one another? They're all into the yisoid is the same. At the end of the day, there's an achdus, there's a oneness. It manifests itself in different ways, but they're connected. Down at the bottom, it's all interconnected, like the trunk of a tree. No matter how big the tree is, and how far one leaf is from the other leaf, at the bottom, they're all interconnected. And if you're able to raise one leaf 2 foot without tearing it off the tree, then you've raised the whole tree. There's no other way that you can do it. And so if you've raised the neshoma and you're still alive, then your guf must have been raised with it. If you haven't separated your neshoma from your guf and your neshoma's gone higher, then your body's gone higher too. You can't move the one without the other. And that person is then developing that type of shleimus which he was destined to achieve. And if man allows matter to take advantage to win, you see what words he says here. If you leave matter to win, what does that imply? That inertia will, the natural state is for Chomer to win. Hine yushpal haguf, then the body will deteriorate. Vatushpal nishmosayim, and it takes the neshoma down with him. You can't do an avera, a physical avera, and think that the soul remains unaffected. If the body is moving, the soul is moving with it. If the soul is moving, the body is moving with it. And this whole sefer is a study of the dynamics between the spiritual and the physical. Neshoma and guf, the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael, man and God. The whole dynamics, how the one affects the other. That's really the sefer. That's really the subject of the sefer.
It's a bit of a strange thing, because if the natural state is towards the body, that means that unless the spiritual actually joins battle with it and now tries to win, that's where you remain. And yeah. It's not that there's a constant battle. You actually have to join the battle.
The neshama is pulling. There is a natural pull of the neshama. There is a natural desire to do good. There's a natural pull of the neshama, which creates a tension. That's why a person doesn't feel good when he does bad. Even not a spiritual person doesn't feel nice when he does something bad. He feels good before he does it, and he feels good while he's savoring the thought of doing it, and he might even feel good while he's doing it. But at the end of it, it leaves him with a feeling of something not right and something not clean. There is a natural, the neshama is pulling. It's just that the naturally, gravity wins. Naturally, you pull downwards. And then that person is less fit for perfection and completeness and is pushed away from it. And man has the ability to subject his matter before his intellect and before his soul and thus to acquire his perfection by the subjection of his material drives to his intellectual judgment, as we have established. Do you see now really why psychology and psychiatry is such a hopeless, with respect to Trevor and others, is such a hopeless pursuit? Do you see what it is? Why there's this self-searching that goes on? What can psychology do at most if one's not dealing with the spirit at well? What are you dealing with? So you're dealing with a goof. Because after all, it's a medical or a semi-medical problem. So you're dealing with a goof. You're dealing with bodily urges. So you're dealing with the power urge and the sexual urge and all these things. You're dealing with all material urges. But the spiritual, which is what the cause of the whole problem is the milchoma. The tension in the human being, that's the milchoma. So assuming that there's nothing physiologically wrong with a person, that's where the point of human problem has to be this milchoma. That they don't touch. That's not for them. Shama, spiritual, religious, that's not for us to deal with. So what are you dealing with? So you're dealing with human tensions, leaving aside the one aspect of the tension. It's like trying to understand the tension, but you're only looking, you take a piece of string and you tie it tight on two ends, and then you say, right, but I specialize on the left-hand side. So we can cut the string in the middle. I'm not going to look at the right-hand side. Now you see, there is no tension. Why are you feeling tension? Now you should be relaxed. What's the cause of all the tension? What's the cause of all the tension? Because you're ignoring the other pole. That's why it is impossible. It's totally ridiculous to do that. Apart from the development of technical skills to handle technical problems, but to get to the essence of human tensions, there can't be unless one's going to discuss this. So then what's the next thing that psychology does is forget about guilt. Guilt has no place. Of course guilt has no place. Guilt is part of the pull of the two tensions. When the neshama and the goof are pulling against each other and one follows the goof, there's a feeling of guilt. But if you're ignoring that part, I'm sure there's no reason for guilt. There's no reason for anything. There's no reason to live. It's just something that can't take place. And that's why Torah is the study of the tension, of human tension. Because human tension is the tension between matter and spirituality. That is the human tension. And all human problems that are not physical, purely physical, are related at their source to this tension between matter and spirit. It has to be. No? Well, some way they did. That's why they went for reparations afterwards. I don't know how long it lasts, but there's a moment. There's a natural feeling of the human being. A person can probably destroy that natural feeling. I don't think Hitler felt bad. And a couple of his cronies, one can destroy that feeling as well. But a normal person has deep down some conscience still, which is a function of his neshama. Could be. I don't know. And in human relations as well, where you say, but a lot of these tensions are the results of faulty human interrelationships. But why are the interrelationships faulty? Because one isn't relating on a neshama to neshama basis. One's relating only on a goof to goof basis, or a goof to neshama basis, or a neshama to goof basis. that there isn't enough of an understanding of deeper relationships and how their dynamics of work and function. And so with the human being and his environment, with the human being and his material environment, all these things are functions of a lack of understanding of this interrelationship. And unfortunately, why do we find that sometimes an involvement in Yiddishkeit aggravates psychological problems? Why does that so often happen that people get involved, they get worse, more neurotic, and they're more aggressive, and they're more...
Imbalance.
What's the imbalance? No, it's not no spiritual at all. It's an involvement in Yiddishkeit without neshama, which doesn't help at all. On the contrary, it makes it worse. Now you're even involved in neshama without neshama. That becomes the most tense thing of all. Ve'omnam goza tuvo yizborach shemoy, and the Ribbono shel Olam decreed in his goodness. It's vital. It's vital. The Rabbi Yeruchim brings in the name of Rabbi Simcha Zissel when it says in Mishle, Chochma u'musar evinim bozu. That Chochma and Musar, the foolish people despise. Rabbi Simcha Zissel used to say, apparently, that Chochma they don't despise. Everybody admires wisdom. And even Musar they don't despise. But the understanding that the basis of all Chochma is Musar. That's what the Evilim despise. Which is interesting. That's what he says in the name of Reb Simcha Zissel. I haven't seen it in Reb Simcha Zissel. What I saw in Reb Simcha Zissel is a little different. But that's what the Yerucham says, Reb Simcha Zissel means. The Evil despises the acknowledgement that the Yesoid, that the foundation, again, back to last night, that Yesoid, that underlying principle, that unifying principle, is an ethical one. That Evilim don't like to hear. They like to separate the Chochma from the Musar. Ethics fine and Chochma fine, but that the two are the same, that they don't want to hear. Well, yeah, this is a Musar Seder. This is a Musar Seder. Sorry? If you work in Yeshiva, how often is a Musar Seder? Half an hour a day. And how many hours Torah Gemara do they learn? In a day? Sorry? 12, so it's 1/24th of their time is on a Musa Seder. So figure out how many hours a week are we learning Torah. We're doing more than they do in Yeshiva. We're doing more Musa than they do in Yeshiva. In terms of time, one should learn Musa half an hour every day. Everybody should learn Musa. Everybody should learn Musa every day. But there's no point in making the Musar also to become a non-neshama limud. Person can sit and can shuckle away at his Musar, and it also doesn't mean anything. There should be Musar in everything. When you're learning Chumash, it should be Musar. When you're learning Mishnah, it should be Musar. When you're learning Gemara, it should be Musar. When you're learning everything. It's not a question of... That's why there was such objection to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's introduction of a Musar Seyed into Yeshiva. Not because they were anti-Musar, Chas V'Sholem. But they felt that you're then making a subject out of Musar, whereas Musar should be the whole Torah. That was the whole objection. The discovery of the neshama of Torah, that should be in everything that you learn. We can't define it, Henry. All we can try and do is describe it, and we can say that if you divide the drives in man into two areas, that drive which is a material drive, those drives which are not explicable in terms of his physical being are spiritual drives. Those drives which are for self-preservation are all physical drives. The creative drive is a spiritual drive. That man is willing to sacrifice his life for an idea. That's a spiritual drive, that's not a physical drive. So those things which can't be explained, I mean, as much as, then again, psychologists try and explain even spiritual drives physically. The reason he does it is because he really wants the honor and the recognition. And one can reduce everything to physical drive. But if one looks at it carefully and one divides them into those drives which are designed for self-preservation, as opposed to those which are designed for being part of something bigger. That as we go through the Sefer, it will become clearer what the physical and the spiritual sides are. What he said so far is neshama and intellect on the one hand, body and matter and I'll go for me to see where he got it here. The two definitions. The guf and matter, body and matter. So it's the body and matter as opposed to the mind and the spirit. You see, it becomes very, very difficult because in every motivation, I'll probably need to explain to you something that I did with the ladies yesterday. It's not just that certain motivations, and this is where psychology really goes crazy, because it's not just that you can classify certain motivations and say these are spiritual and these are physical. Let's take the sex drive. Is that spiritual or is that physical? So the pashtus simply would say it's physical because animals have it too. Nothing particularly human about it. But then you take the sexual drive and you find out, what is it composed of? Is it merely physical? Or is part of it a desire for sharing and a desire for chesed, and as we did in the Vilna Gaon yesterday, a desire to do good to another person? Is that part of the sexual drive? Is a person attracted to any, and here you see where man differs from a woman. A man is not just attracted to an attractive woman. You'll find a particular man, you'll say, who are you attracted more to? And you'll say, that one. And you'll say, but which one is more beautiful? You'll say, that one. So why are you attracted to that one more? It doesn't know. More chayin is all sorts of words to describe it. What does it really mean? That the attraction is not purely a physical one, that there's something much deeper to it than that. When we talk about the power drive, is that spiritual or is that physical? So animals have it too, to an extent. Is it self-preservation? Yes, it is. But perhaps it's much more than that. Perhaps it's a desire to be potent, to be creative, to affect and to influence the world. So in every drive, we can't just take it and say, these are spiritual and these are physical. In every drive, there is physical and there is spiritual. Can we just quickly focus that? You're the nearest. Eiv, Lamed Gimel. Have you got Eiv right here? I'll find the place right here. Thanks. Stareches laodom laasig ashlimus. But the Ribbono Shel Olam decreed that there should be a limit to this battle which takes place to achieve shlemus. Uchshehishlim hishtadlusoi, and when that effort has been completed, yasig shlemusoi v'yanuach b'hanaso lenetzach netzochim, then he is able forever and ever to benefit from the fruits of his efforts. Al kein huchgeku loy shnei zmanim, and therefore two time slots have been created. Echod zman ha'avoda, one time period where men are meant to work, ve'echod zman kibul haschar, and one time period where men are meant to achieve the results. V'ula midas ha'toiv merubo, and since the Ribbono Shel Olam prefers good, she'avoda yesh lo zman mechukok, the time for work is limited. K'mo she'goz rechof mozo yizbarach shemoye yesu nois l'ze, ve'kibul haschar ein lo itachlis, but the time for reward is unlimited. Elo nanetach netzachim, forever and ever he then is able to benefit from the shlemus which he perfected. So do you see how death is introduced here for the first time as a chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam? What does it say in the Medrash when it says that the Ribbono Shel Olam saw everything that he created? Behinei tov ma'id. Ma'id was the Malach HaMovis, the Medrash says, for many reasons, but the one reason that the Medrash that we can give now for the Medrash is it's a chesed, that this battle doesn't go on endlessly, that we're in a state of tension. And the Ribbono Shel Olam places a time limit on that period of tension. So that's for the 120 years that we live, and then the tension is over. Then we've got to benefit from the results that we've achieved. Paul, 1 second, what do you want to know? Right. doesn't matter. If your job has been worth that, then that's fine, and you don't feel that it's a handout. What's wrong with what are you supporting Mandela's nationalization campaign? No. That everybody must earn the same and that everybody must work the same hours? That's the chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that what you're working for is infinite. But that we have the ability that the Ribbono Shel Olam created by giving us the ability to deal with infinite concepts here. He gave us the ability to develop infinite reward. We're dealing with neshamas, we're dealing with mitzvahs, we're dealing with things that are infinite. Yeah. You hear that? Now Hashem set the time limit. Hashem set the time limit, which is 120 years. Thanks you. That's right. At the bottom of that page, there's an important pasuk. In pasuk Chaf Gimel, Im Yesh Olov Maloch Melitz Echod Minei Olef. If there is a Maloch Melitz, that's an angel who gives a good report. Echod Minei Olef, one out of 1,000. Lahagid LaOdom Yoshroi, telling of a man his straightness. So the Gemara says that means that you can have 999 angels reporting to the Ribbono Shel Olam about how bad a person is, and one reporting about how good he is. And it goes on to say the Ribbono Shel Olam will accept the one. So that means he's done 999 averus, and he's done one mitzvah, and that one mitzvah can save a man. That's the pashtus of the pasuk. Rabbi Elozar ben Rabbi Yossi Haglili says it means one angel giving 999 points against and 1.4. What's enough gemina between them? Between the 2 days? Why is that a machlokes in the Gemara? What's the difference between the two views? There's 1,000 different actions. Right. The Rabbi Elozar Rabbi Yossi Haglili says every action is made up of 1,000 parts, and 1,000 is a stammer figure. It can be a lot more than 1,000 as well. There are 1,000 different motivations in every action, and 999 of them might be bad. One of them might be good, so it could be an avera. If 999 of them are bad and one is good, it's probably an avera that he did. But in the avera, there's 1,000th of a positive motivation. The Ribbono Shel Olam will magnify that 1,000th. Now, where do they get it from? They get it from, if you look at the posuk, if you look at the trop in the posuk, you'll see how where Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elozar, but Rabbi Yossi Haglili gets it from. The way that the Tanakhama learns it, the way that the first day learns it, is Im Yesh Olov Malach Melitz Echod Min Elef. If there is one Malach Melitz out of 1,000, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will accept it. But if you look at the trop, it's not like that. Im Yesh Olov Malach, stop. If there is a Malach, Melitz, one who gives good credit. Echod Mine Olef, one in 1,000. Not that one angel in 1,000, but the credit is one in 1,000. That's out of 1,000 things that the Malach reports, only one of them is good. Now each mitzvah is one Malach, so if we're talking about one Malach, we're talking about one deed. That's the complexity of the human being. To understand that in every deed there are thousands of forces that bring the human being to make that deed. Did the women ask you at the Shabbos lunch what you thought about how many women at the table asked? How many men had the question posed at lunch? Even. That's all. That's unbelievable. I'll get it from you next week. Nobody else did. You were meant to be asked. Have dan lechol adam lechatzchus, the Mishnah says. Why? Why? You see a man doing wrong. Why dan lechav schus? What's the answer? Sorry? No, you're jumping a step ahead. Why do that to a man? But it's not right. Why can't you dan lechav schus? So Hitler was a tzaddik. Dan lechav schus. What does it mean, dan lechav schus? Why do I say Hitler was a tzaddik? So Hashem should say I'm a tzaddik. Good. And so it's mashugah. What does it mean? Have you done the cholod on the chavsus? What's the reason? You're disqualified. You. That's good. Pashtus, everybody learns that it's sophic. You don't know. How do you know what goes on? Look at all these motivations in a man. Do you know what really drove him to do these things? Do you know what you would have done in his circumstance? What do you know? All you can see is the tip of the iceberg. Do you know what lies under the surfaces? What forces, what milchomas he has, what tensions he's coping with? How can you just go and write him off? Who knows? That's the pashtus that it's learned. Which would then mean that the Ribbono Shel doesn't work that way. Because the Ribbono Shel doesn't see the tip of the iceberg, the Ribbono Shel sees the whole iceberg. So he doesn't have to be dan chol adam lechavschus. What we see from this posuk is that dan chol adam lechavschus is not because of sophic. But dan lechol adam lechavschus is vada. Because in every action there is a thousandth good, you have to be able to magnify that good. You have to be able to see that good and relate to that good and set aside the other 999, because that's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. In what? You mean sometimes there isn't even? Yeah, it means even. Even in Yesh, but it's possible one can be a Rosh HaGomer where there's nothing. That's a Rosh HaGomer where there's nothing that you can find at all. And that's why Hevedan L'Cholodom L'Chatzchus is not in all cases. There are cases where you don't, but in normal cases you do. And I made the point that that's altogether in life. Because there is much more negative than there is positive. And if you're going to allow yourself to be influenced by the more superficial or the louder or the majority, then you're going to go through life as seeing ugly things and only ugly things. The art in life is to be able to pick out that one in a thousand and achieve a great deal of joy from that one in a thousand. To be able to amplify. Really what an amplifier does, to pick out the right sounds and to keep out the negative sounds, although the negative sounds might be louder and more disturbing, to be able to amplify the good ones. To amplify them to the point where the negative you don't even notice, you don't hear the negative. That's what Hevedan Chol Olam L'Chatzchus means. And that's the complexity of the human being. So when we talked about this constant tension and the difference between the physical and the spiritual, it's not again that you can say the sexual drive is spiritual and the creative drive is physical. There's another way around. The creative drive is spiritual and the sexual drive is physical. One is good, one is bad. That's not how it works. In every drive there are thousands of motivations. Some of them are spiritual, some of them are physical. And it's a matter of constantly trying to increase the spirituality and decrease the physicality in each of the things that we do.